Well, you're here.
You're here too.
And now
we're
that you
here.
Are, we're all in the company of your cool aunts. I'm Sam.
And I'm Ted.
And this is Your Cool Aunts Presents The Wine Merchant. So, welcome back. If you're new here, check out the website. There's tons of stuff there. I won't list everything now, but it's worthwhile, especially the backstory. So, check it out. There's a page on the website called The Boardroom, which is an overview of all the episodes. It kind of bunches everything together for you in a really quick way with links to every story right where you need them. So
easy breezy.
Yeah, it is. Well, anyway, we have a new diary entry ahead of us. It's the 58th in Claire's diary. Can you believe that?
Yeah,
wow.
Can't imagine. I remember when it was just one or two. Now it's 58.
Allegedly. Well, they have captured the suspects. The counterfeiting has been figured out, and there's more to be discovered.
We
told,
still have
whatever.
Questions. That's what we said when we were at the end
we
of
have
the
some
last.
Questions.
We have some questions. We have to answer some of the questions here.
Well, let's see if Claire tells us anything in her note.
Okay.
Niece's aunts and friends says, Claire, it has been only about 18 hours since we started the plan, and I am amazed. I honestly can't believe every tick of the operation went off as planned. I'm thrilled. I know everyone else here is thrilled as well, including and especially Alexander. However, we all pale in comparison to Annalise, because she is beaming with pride and genuinely really happy for each and every one of us. You know, there's nothing like a little or a very big deal successful campaign to boost one's confidence, that's for sure. Our Madam General is brilliant, steady, and above all else, she was right on target with every detail. Of course, she's talking about Annalise there.
Right.
We could not have solved this and so damn fast without her guidance. I think we'll have a decent chance of hiring her into the wine merchant.
You think?
You think? One funny thing, though. She's never asked for any detail about my arrangement with Sid, Barrett, Grace, et al., and Laurent. Not a peep. She'll know soon enough, though. And I think maybe she kind of knows about it already. And get ready for the next leg of this journey. Strap yourself in, because there's a lot about to happen in this morning after story.
She said that the other last time.
CBJ. No, I think you said
oh,
strap
I said
yourself
that. That's right.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of, like, buzziness, right?
Buzziness. Just imagine if you were at the wine merchant right now, all the activity and stuff that's going on.
Yeah, that's
on.
What I mean. The buzziness,
yeah, buzziness
of it all. You know,
buzz, buzz. Okay, let's get going. Now that we've done that little intro, I want to know what's going on.
Everybody does. The title of this diary entry is called, you got to love this one, Delusional.
Who? Alex? Maybe it's Alex.
Put the mirror down, Claire. Okay. Of course, says Claire, of course, Alexander knew about the other counterfeiting and that the deal, these things are in air quotes, the deal he offered Robert Levesque was never real or legal, not even for a moment. When they parted ways, Robert thought he had escaped danger by duping his cousin again. His mistake? By signing the deed attestation, a special clause confirming that any and all of the documents had been executed with a sound mind, freely, without duress or reservation.
Oh. Like not having a gun to your head.
It cannot be revoked ever. This time, it was the other cousin who had been duped. Laughing to himself on the drive back to Claire's shop, Alexander said aloud in his car, "It's not as if he's going to be coming after me about the vineyard deed transfer, at least not from jail, and not anytime soon either." Hmm. Well, there's got to be some satisfaction in that one, right?
Yep. After
he all still doesn't have his wine, though.
That's right. He still doesn't have his wine. But if Al Delavine has anything to it, then he won't get his wine back, because she's got to reclaim it.
She has an interest, right?
Yeah.
Okay. The next section is entitled, This Is, emphasis is, this is who he was. By the time the receptionist announced the arrival of the police, Robert had already made a dozen calls or more looking for Marcus. Panicked, he was even more concerned about the, quote, people he was indebted to. Having dabbled in stock investments and any scheme he could get his hands on, Robert was always looking for fast, flashy hits. Unsurprisingly, he also had a penchant for gambling and hanging out with sketchy characters. It didn't take long for him to connect with the sort of people who don't ask questions about his methodologies or his sources or anything, really. Robert offered them a, quote, financial plan to legitimize their cash flow. In other words, to launder drug trade profits. And, as is the case with most criminal enterprises, everything was fine until it wasn't. 6 months earlier, his underworld clients took control of the family vineyard in lieu of payment for a series of Robert's losing financial maneuvers. The markets turned, and to cover the losses, Robert took ever-increasing positions on heightening risks. Most people would call this gambling, and these people do not like to lose. Mm. Well, Robert, any thoughts?
Well, I guess I'm just wondering, now that we have the backstory on Robert, what happens now with his payment to these people?
There's a lot more detail to come here.
Okay, all right. Okay. I jumped the gun. Sorry.
No, you're not done. So you're thinking,
I'm ahead.
You're saying what I'm thinking. All Robert had at that point was control of the vineyard, and they took it. However, given that they were so fair-minded, Robert actually believed they would give him back control once they covered the losses that he created in the first place. That's like people who think if they default on a mortgage, the bank will sell the house and give them the change.
No, never happens.
Yeah, the bank will sell it and they'll take what I owe them and then they'll give me the rest. Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. Robert believed they had little or no desire to be in the wine business. And I think he may have convinced himself he was going to get away with this debacle too. After all, his entire life experience was about getting away with his bad acts. So he wasn't necessarily wrong in that sense. But then again, this proverbial cat was on its 10th, 11th, or maybe more appropriately, his 13th life. Hmm.
Don't look at me. I don't know what's going on.
You know, at some point when you burn that wick from both ends, it beats itself in the middle.
It does.
Okay, moving right along. Claire is going to tell us something about Marcus now. And she says, I'm not sure if he is a criminal or merely a guy caught up in one bad decision that led him into the abyss of mob activities. I have to remind myself not to get all compassionate about this guy, though. I do wonder if he could have done something to break it all up. Below is Eves's brief version of what Marcus shared with them during the interrogation. His only ask was for protection for his family. And you have to at least maybe like him just a little bit for including his dog in his the request.
What a kind soul.
God.
Please don't kill my dog.
Okay, so here we're going. She's quite a bit here about, it's called The Backstory According to a Criminal, Marcus's statement to the police. And this is in Marcus's words. He says, I got into a bad situation with them. I was desperate and they loaned me a lot of money to keep my business afloat. And when I couldn't pay them back fast enough, they just took it from me. Listen, these people always send in their own guy when they snatch anything from a boat to a business. And this time, I was the one who was sent to the undue vineyard. It's not like I had a choice. I was forced to run the place and bottle the wine they sent in from Spain. I didn't know anything about wine. But you know, any fool could taste that the wine at undue was the good stuff. I tried my best. All I had to go by was YouTube videos. I was all alone out there. And then it wasn't even a month before they decided that the money coming in was too slow. So they decided to do what they always do, counterfeit. It's their favorite game. They love it. Counterfeit anything, counterfeit everything. I was told to go out there and to pick one. Pick any vineyard around there, whoever, they didn't care. The more expensive, the better. In fact, they told me to find the most expensive one and that they'd get the labels and then I had to take care of the rest. Bottle it, ship it out somewhere far away. This is how they operated. Bold, crazy, and no one ever got in their way. On purpose, anyway. They forced me to run that bottling line. I had to do as they said. Bottle the Spanish wine, label it as Andoux, and then use their good wine to counterfeit the best in the region. That was the whole plan. I drove around the area, and when I saw that Delavine sign, the place looked like the real thing. I Googled it, and I saw the high bottle prices, which meant that I could give them what they wanted, more money faster. That's how I picked the target. I gave them the information, and a few days later, they sent the labels. Just the rest like was just dumped in my lap. Can you believe this guy?
Just like that.
Everything, he says, everything from shipping boxes, corks, and all the paperwork, I had to make it look legitimate in every way, on top of bottling the stuff. I told you, they don't play around, and if I couldn't, or worse, wouldn't make it happen, they'd off me. But only after making me watch them torture and kill my family. I wonder if his dog was included in that, too. Right?
I had to do it. They made me do it. I couldn't. Yeah, but you know who you were getting in bed with from the beginning.
You know.
It's not an, he's not an innocent bystander here. This is not a, you know, he was.
You know, desperation is an ugly beast. It yes, creeps it up is. And it gets bigger and bigger.
Wow.
Later that day.
Meanwhile.
Later that day, that's the end of Marcus's statement there. Claire says, later that day, Alexander returned from Paris and was back at the shop before noon with the deeds in hand. I offered to stash them in my wall safe, and then he collapsed in the last empty chair at the table. Well, that all fell into place nicely now, didn't it? Said Annalise, who has a way of delivering what might sound like an innocuous statement, yet its effect on those who know what she really means is priceless. Here we were, all together again, sleep-deprived, starving, howling with laughter like a little pack of wolves. Annalise had taken to calling us mes petits loups, my little wolves. Well, so they're all back at the shop, and they're tired, and it's done, and Alexander comes barreling in from Paris, and he's got the deeds.
He's got his place back. I wonder if those guys...
Where's the wine?
I was going to say, where's the wine, and are those guys going to take the deeds from him? Maybe. If they're ruthless, I don't know. I mean...
I don't know. Sometimes they don't stick around. They just take off, right? Claire says, there were as many lines of conversations as people at that table. Amid the cacophony, Brigitte sent a text message across the street to the boulangerie. She offered them a case of wine in trade for a few baguettes and maybe quiche if there's any left. Anything would be appreciated. Not even 5 minutes later, I could see Karine put her little coat and hat on to head over to our shop. She's the baker's 6-year-old daughter, and she's the cutest little girl in the world. She's also quite proud of her missing front teeth, which she demonstrates for anyone who stops to listen. I think when little kids do that, they wiggle their loose tooth.
Waiting for the tooth fairy.
Yeah. Claire says, she reminds me of myself at that age. And as she crossed the street with a huge paper bag, several baguettes were threatening to jump out. In the other hand, she carried an oversized basket by the handle. Alexander was the only hero with enough strength left to walk back with her and to carry the wine in trade to Karine's mother. When he returned, he had yet another bag. And this is Alexander. He says, she said there's butter, cheese, and something sweet in this one. Annalise and I arranged the selection at the end of the bar with a stack of plates, some silverware, and napkins. All my favorites were there. Her little rectangular millefeuille pastries filled with a heavenly pork, mushroom, and white wine mixture. Quiche Lorraine. Wedges of cheese, butter, those little mini fruit tarts. This was a feast to behold for sure. Brigitte opened several bottles of our wine and left them in the center of the table, saying, "Help yourself. Self-pour if you like. We're not shy around here."
I want that lunch.
I love these, like, spontaneous celebratory lunches. And, you know, everybody's just...
Oh, today was a special day anyway, right? Can you see the little kid chucking across the street with her basket and her, the baguettes hanging out? You know, I was thinking about baguettes and how in French society, you can't sell a baguette for an inordinate amount of money, right? It's all controlled by the state. So everybody gets at least a piece of bread a day, which is, you know, something to be said about that.
Yep.
Anyway, so what happened?
Claire says, "It was the perfect meal for that moment, as well as being a really nice break for Annalise, too. She's been doing all of the cooking in the shop, and she surely earned the break and some time off her feet and the seat at the head of this table at the wine merchant's shop." Oh, here we go with Annalise again. The conversations were crisscrossing, overlapping, interspersed with laughing, and more than a few recaps of the operation. Our little caper was named by Annalise, of course. But Alexander was not quite himself. He was on the quiet
he's
side.
He's always brooding about something.
Oh, God, maybe even a little pensive. And when I asked, he insisted, "No, nothing was wrong. How could anything be wrong now?" And Claire says, "It wasn't at all hard for me to see and to know what he was thinking about." Aha, see, she's really getting to know him. She's telling us. All of that beautiful wine he had produced, that promising vintage, what was going to happen to it all? Was it all for naught? Did it matter? No. Wow. It's solved, but it's like, ugh.
Poor guy.
Trying to lighten things up, I assured him things were going to fall into place. Just as Annalise said earlier. But I meant it, because I still had a few things up my sleeve.
What other things does she have up her sleeve?
One of the most difficult things in the world for me, I had to be patient. Again, just as Annalise directed. Patient for the right moment. And she gives us a quote here. She says, I think it's Annalise. She says, "The right moment always makes itself known unsubtly. Do not worry about missing it. You'll know for sure when it arrives." And then Claire says, "I do wish I could share a little something with him, just to cheer him up, to get him out of the doldrums." He was ruminating on the details over and over again and over and over again. It was all he was thinking about. He needed a change of scenery at a minimum.
Well, Claire, maybe you should help him get a change of scenery. Offer him a different scene.
Well, wow, this is a lot. So everything's solved. They're all back at the shop. It's done.
Well,
but now things need
really
to be sorted out,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, things still need to be sorted out.
So she said, wait a minute, so how did that end? She said he needed a change of scenery at a minimum. The next section says, hours later, the pack of wolves pushed Alexander and me out the door, promising to do the cleanup. Annalise thanked me, kissed us both on both cheeks, and the same for Remy, and told us to go home, get some sleep, and don't you come back here before noon tomorrow. We walked slowly, arm in arm, and without a word, as Remy led the way, stopping occasionally to wait for us to catch up before he turned and continued on. And as we made that last turn into the driveway, there he was, waiting for us on the front step. Say two. That's it.
Wow.
I guess that's the change of scenery.
I guess
took him home.
Yeah, I was going to say, moving from one place to the other. That's a change.
Wow. Oh, the moodiness that's come in here.
Yeah, it's kind of like, reminds you of a foggy night, you know?
Yes.
Like
oh, I just got a little chill.
Coming through the windows.
Yes.
And,
yes.
And it's a little cool, and you go, from the, especially if you live near the ocean. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
well,
his mood is like the
what
fog.
A roller coaster day they had. I mean, he was in Paris before dawn. I'm sure he was up all night, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
What, this is about an hour and 40 minutes, 45 minutes from Paris without traffic. So I'm sure he got there pretty quickly. And then he turned around. He was headed back before, you know, before the police got there anyway to Robert Levesque's office.
Yep.
So he gets back to the wine merchants. They sort of all collapse and they end up, I guess, eating a late lunch maybe by that time, huh?
A wonderful late lunch.
Yeah.
It's always a wonderful late lunch. Have you heard of a lunch in France that's bad? Never. Never. You go to the boulangerie and you pick up stuff and it's wine and it was delivered, which is even better, right?
The little girl crossing the street. Yeah. Little six-year-old toothless little girl coming across the street with
cute.
A sack of bread and some stuff. Oh, my God.
So we still have a few unanswered questions left.
Well, Robert's going to the clink.
Yep.
Marcus is going to the clink.
Marcus is going.
Hopefully Marcus's family is going to be protected. But, you know, jury's out on that one. Maybe he'll get a good deal for all his cooperation. Mm. And
but we still don't know where the wine. Where is the wine? We still don't have that piece yet.
Nope.
And there's nothing in this episode that tells us that. Nothing.
Wait a second. If you remember, Claire did a little ad-libbing. She went off script, as she said, and without direction or approval from Annalise, after all the activity had gone down, she ran across and closed down the shipping dock. So nothing was shipped out that day.
That's right.
I don't know what the status is there, but Claire shot across. She couldn't find Brigitte.
Right.
She went across from Annalise's house. She went across. She closed it all down and sent the creepy truck drivers on their way. So I don't know. I don't know what wine that was. So there's a little question mark there.
You know when you're watching a really good serialized show and you get to the end and you think there's going to be a little bit more and all of a sudden here comes the credits and you go, I can't believe they left us hanging there. Right?
She
That's
does
what
that
it feels like.
You know? Every week you say this. She
no,
does
I don't
that.
Say it
Claire
every week. I don't
that.
Say it quite like this every week. But it really does. I feel like it's a good show and I want to know what's going on. Or I'm not given enough, I guess. I'm still left hanging. So I guess I'll have to tune in next time.
Oh, well, Claire.
What are we up to, 58?
Yeah, I think so. That was 50, the 58th.
Maybe we'll know
entry.
Something in 59.
Well.
We'll see.
We'll see. That wraps up this diary entry. So,
okay.
You can go back. You can listen to any and all.
But you can't listen forward. You can catch up.
You can go study the previous diary entries for clues. So anyway, I'm Sam.
And I'm Ted.
And we'll see you next time when we're
back at the mic.